Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. We've been hearing a lot in the news lately about the Federal Reserve raising interest rates. So I wanted to go through and look at that possibility through the lens of the repo market. A lot of you probably started following me back in 2019 as a result of the whiteboard videos that I was doing explaining how the repo market works. I was doing this because we had this huge blow up. I believe it was September 17th, 17th or 19th, if my memory serves me right. No, I think it was September 17th of 2019. So repo rates spiked to almost 10%. And if the Fed would not have stepped in and did and pretty much bailed out the repo market, the entire global financial system could have collapsed. And I think most of you are aware of that. And hopefully a lot of you have watched my videos on the repo market. I've probably done, well, I don't know, 7, 10 of them. But I'm going to be doing another one tomorrow for the George Gammon Whiteboard channel. But I wanted to explore some ideas around the Fed raising interest rates and how that may affect the repo market. And I think it could potentially cause another collapse. Maybe call it a repo crisis 2.0. And I had the opportunity to sit down and talk with Joseph Wang quite extensively this weekend at Rebel Capitals Live. He was one of the speakers. And for those of you who don't know Joseph, he ran the New York trading desk for the New York Fed's trading desk, excuse me. So that would be the trading desk basically for the Federal Reserve. So when they were doing quantitative easing, or as they're doing quantitative easing, he was the person that would actually buy the mortgage-backed securities and the treasuries from the banks themselves. So there is nobody that's more of a quote-unquote Fed insider than Joseph Wang. And I was talking to him about why he thought the repo market blew up. And he has quite a different view than Snyder. But then I kind of worked through some thought experiments with him that I'm going to include on the whiteboard video tomorrow. And I want to share those with you today, because again, as most of you know, the repo market is vitally important to the health of the global economy. And if the repo market freezes up or collapses, or if interest rates go to 10% and the Fed can't bail them out, then the entire house of cards comes crashing down. So let's get into it right now. I want to start, by going to an article from CNBC. So higher interest rates upset stock market as hot inflation tests the Fed. Most of you have been following this story, been talking about it a lot lately on the Rebel Capitalist channel. Key points: U.S. stocks resumed their sell-off Monday as government bond yields continued to trek upward. By the way, that in and of itself is a huge story, how high yields have gone on like the 10-year and the 30-year treasury. I should do a video on that later on today. A hint that many traders are certain the Fed will soon hike rates. Traders say the pressure on U.S. stocks isn't thanks to material concerns about the economy. Give me a break. How could it not be about material? What are you talking about, CNBC? Let me read this. Traders say the pressure on U.S. stocks isn't thanks to material concerns about the economy, but portfolio repositioning for higher borrowing costs. Okay. But yeah, it's not really, because the market's been going down significantly. So they're saying that, well, it's just because of this rotation that you see out of high growth names into value stocks. That's what they're trying to say here. And I guess maybe there's something to that when there's been these like maybe 10 drivers of the entire stock market and these huge mega corporations. And now that people are rotating out of them, that's bringing the stock market down. But let's be honest, look at the Fed's balance sheet and look at the stock market. There is a direct correlation. In other words, as the Fed's balance sheet increases, meaning they're doing more quantitative easing, the market goes up and up and up. Now, I would argue that there's not a direct causal effect between the Fed and the stock market. It's not like they're buying shares, but when they do things like back up corporate bonds, then those corporations are going to issue more debt because they're getting a cheap price. And then they're going to take that additional capital, they're going to buy their shares back, and that's going to drive up stock prices. So indirectly, I think the Fed's balance sheet really controls asset prices. And I think it directly does from the standpoint of psychology. And this is the expectations policy that my good friends Jeff Snyder and Emil Kalinowski always talk about on their podcast, Making Sense. So my argument, or what I'm saying here, is that they're trying to lay the blame at the feet of, well, it's just repositioning, but let's be honest here, that it's all about the Fed's balance sheet at the end of the day. So if the market thinks there's a higher probability that the Fed will not only reduce or take tape, let me say that again. If the market believes that the Fed will not only taper all the way down to zero, their existing QE purchases, but then in addition to that, raise rates, in addition to that, they're going to do quantitative tightening, meaning they're actually going to start selling bonds, reducing the size of their balance sheet. That was kind of the powder keg that exploded the other day when the market got the Fed minutes and they saw that they're not only talking about tapering, they're talking about raising rates, and they were talking about doing QT. The market just absolutely fell out of bed. And we're continuing to see that type of downtrend. So now you have the potential for interest rates, which appear likely they might not start going up until June. Said Charles Schwab's Randy Frederick. Now there's more like an 80% chance that'll happen in March. Okay, so let's go to the Fed's balance sheet and think this through. And I'm actually going to move the Fed's balance sheet over here so we can quickly go back and forth between that and repo. So back in 2018, the Fed started quantitative tightening. This is what the market is freaking out about, in addition to tapering and interest rate hikes. But the market the last week or so, it was caught offsides by the Fed minutes when they were not only hawkish because of those first two things, but the market did not expect them to start talking about quantitative tightening. So going back to this chart, this is the last time they started to do quantitative tightening, reduce the size of their balance sheet. It's about 2018. Call it January 2018. So you can see the size of their balance sheet decreasing. This is because they're selling the assets on their balance sheet instead of buying them from, let's say, the banksters. So as they're selling these, actually, let me take a step back. So let's just say JP Morgan has a reserve account at the Fed. Those bank reserves denominated in dollars are a liability on the Fed's balance sheet. Now, the Treasury, let's say, is an asset on the Fed's balance sheet. So you guys know that when the Fed buys a Treasury from JP Morgan, it goes from JP Morgan's balance sheet over to the Fed. But then how does the Fed pay for that? They simply issue, go to their computer, and maybe Joseph did this himself. I'll have to ask him next time I talk to him. But they just go into JP Morgan's account and just type in a bigger number as far as the bank reserves denominated in dollars they have in their account. This is what expands the size of the Fed's balance sheet. This is quantitative easing. So if they sold that treasury back to JP Morgan, then how does JP Morgan pay for that? Well, they pay for it most likely with bank reserves that are a liability to the Fed. So let's just say that JP Morgan had a billion dollars worth of bank reserves in their account that was held at the Fed. And let's just say they bought $500 million, or the Fed sold them $500 million worth of treasuries. Okay. Those $500 million worth of treasuries would go from the asset side of the Fed's balance sheet over to the asset side of JP Morgan's balance sheet. And then the Fed would simply reduce the number in their reserve account from a billion down to 500 million. Basically, base money has been destroyed. They're reducing the size of their balance sheet. So now let's fast forward to this QT process we saw in 2018. And what happened that made them reverse course in September 2019, that was the repo spike. So just to get a visual of what we're talking about, here are repo rates. And this is the spike that I'm referring to specifically, where this was just probably per half hour that you, but if you look at it like a minute to minute, this got almost up to 10%. So why is that a big deal? Because if repo rates stayed up near 10%, then every single interest rate in the entire economy, even Fed funds, would gravitate or levitate up to that high water mark. So we're talking about Fed funds overnight. Just think about that for a moment. What would happen if the Federal Reserve completely lost control over the overnight rate? Home mortgages. Now they would be based off a 10% interest rate. You want to talk about SOFR and LIBOR? That's been in the news lately. I know my great friend Lynette Zhang has been talking about that. Well, if we switch from LIBOR to SOFR, which they've basically done, SOFR is based on repo transactions. And well, what are mortgages based off? SOFR. So if the repo transactions go up 10%, that means your baseline for mortgages goes up to, let's say, 10%. That's SOFR. And on top of that, the banks would have to charge you a risk premium. So that means mortgages go up to 12%, 13%. What do you think that would do to the housing market? What would this do to the corporate bond market? I mean, you can just go down the list of dominoes that would fall if repo went up to 10% and didn't come back down. So Joseph Wang believes that this was a result of a lack of liquidity in the system. So basically just not enough cash, because in a repo transaction, there's just an entity that says, I need liquidity, I need liquidity, I need cash. And so they have to go into the repo market and say, listen, I'll pledge this collateral, these treasuries, these mortgage-backed securities. And if you give me the cash, and then we'll just swap back the next day, or maybe it's a term repo where they swap back in 2 weeks or 30 days, something like that. And then when they swap back, the entity that borrowed the money pays back a little bit more. So that's the interest rate that they're being charged. And that's what you're seeing in these repo rates. So Joseph Wang's theory is that as the Fed did quantitative tightening, they're doing what? They're reducing the amount of bank reserves the banksters, that are often the counterparty in repo, have access to. In other words, they're reducing the liquidity. They're just, so a way to simply put this is, let's say that you had $1 million and you provided loans to, let's say your friends were in construction or something, and you were providing loans to your friends. So an overnight loan, let's say someone needed to make payroll and they've got a lot of accounts receivable. And so they've got a lot of accounts receivable. They just haven't been paid yet by their clients or whatnot. So they say, hey, listen, I need a $100,000 loan so I can make payroll, and then I'll pay you back next week when my clients pay me from all these outstanding receivables that I have. So you say, okay, sure, I'll give you $100,000 today. Next Tuesday, we'll make it like Popeye. Is that wimpy? I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. That's basically the repo market. So you say, okay, I'll give you the 100 grand today. And then next Tuesday, you give me 100 grand, 101 or something like that. And so that's how the transaction works. But they have to post collateral. So that person that you're giving the $100,000 to, it's not just a handshake. They'd say, okay, I've got this incredible Ford pickup truck or something like that. So I'm going to give you the Ford pickup truck as collateral. And then next Tuesday, when I give you the $101,000, then you give me my truck back. That's basically the repo market right there. That's how it works. So Joseph Wang's point is that, well, wait a minute. If you go from having $1 million that you can lend your buddies that are in construction all the way down to 500 million, at some point there's going to be a crunch if your buddies have all of these receivables that are piling up, and that could happen all on one day, and bam, all of your buddies say, hey, I need 100,000, I need 100,000, I need 100,000. You say, well, wait a minute, guys, I don't have the million anymore that I can lend to you. I only have 500,000. So your buddies start saying, okay, well, next Tuesday, instead of 101,000, I'll pay 105,000. And then the next guy comes in and says, oh, no, George, I need the money really, really bad. I'll pay you 110,000. And the next guy comes in and says, oh, no, George, I need the money even worse. I'll pay you 130,000. That's the repo rate spiking. That's what happens.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
So now let's contrast this view with Jeff Snyder's. Jeff Snyder's view is that it wasn't necessarily a lack of liquidity, but it was a reduction in the amount of liquidity the banks had access to and therefore were willing to commit to in the repo market. It was really a lack of pristine collateral, right? So let's say that that truck is the collateral that I like as a lender. And let's say that all the construction guys that usually borrow from me, get their liquidity from me because those receivables are piling up. Let's say they sell all of their Ford pickup trucks and they buy a Tesla or something like that. And I say, whoa. And so then they come to me and say, George, I need that $100,000 loan. And I'm like, okay, well, what's your collateral? Do you still have your Ford truck? Because I'll take that. And they're like, no, we sold that. I'm like, okay, well, what do you have? They say, oh, well, we have a Tesla Model 3. I'm like, what? How can I use a Tesla Model 3? I don't even know what the price is. If I were to sell it, it's a new car. Sure, it might be cool, but even I can't keep it. It's not really good collateral. So yeah, I don't want that. And then the guy says, but George, I really, really need the loan. I'm like, I don't care if you need the loan. I don't like your collateral. I've got to have something if you default, and I don't want your stupid Model 3. And he says, listen, I need the loan badly. So instead of 101,000, I'll give you 110 and next Tuesday. And I say, I don't know. I still don't like, it's just not worth it to me. Fine. I'll give you 120. This is Jeff Snyder's view, that it wasn't the fact that they had less bank reserves on their balance sheet, therefore potentially less liquidity. It was the fact that there wasn't enough collateral that the counterparties would be willing to accept. Therefore, they had to promise that the risk premium, in other words, the interest rate, the price of that money had to go up. So hopefully, I know that's kind of a ridiculous example, but I think that's something that all of us can easily understand. So now let's look at the repo market. Now that we understand that as a group, let's look at the repo market through the lens of interest rates rising, and then layer over top of that Joseph Wang's view or Jeff Snyder, because I can promise you these guys are the smartest guys in the room. They are just incredibly gifted individuals. One of them is right. That's for sure. I can guarantee you that. There are no certainties, only probabilities. But there is a 100% certainty that one of these guys is correct. So let's assume for a moment that it's Joseph Wang. So that would be a liquidity issue. So if the Fed starts to reduce the size of their balance sheet, in other words, do quantitative tightening, well, then all of a sudden, what happens? That reduces the liquidity. And that means that the probability of having a repo crash again increases the more the Fed has reduced the size of their balance sheet. In other words, taking bank reserves out of the system. Okay, well, what if Jeff Snyder is right? And it's actually a collateral issue. And this is what most people really don't think through. And it's a discussion I had with Joseph this weekend, in addition to, as a panel discussion. So I was having the discussion with Patrick Serezna. I want to give him a huge shout out, Macro Voices. One of my business partners, Lynn Alden, and Joseph Wang. We're all discussing this on stage. So remember that we're talking about bonds. We're talking about treasuries. We're talking about mortgage-backed securities. So you guys know that there's an inverse relationship between the price and the interest rate. Okay. Well, if the Fed raises interest rates, and assuming those rates go up, now maybe then might not go up as far as the same percentage, but assuming interest rates go up along the entire yield curve, so the short end of the curve going all the way out to the long end, the 10-year, the 30-year. And let's just say that the pristine collateral, quote unquote, are the 10-year treasuries. Actually, they would be T-bills, but just for the sake of this, let's just say that, we could do T-bills. Yeah, that's fine, because the Fed has more control of the short end of the curve. So that would definitely be, in fact, that would be even more applicable. So let's just say that you have, that you're the bank again, and that you have all of these, all this cash, and that the counterparties have these treasuries. And let's just say they have $1,000 worth of treasuries, just to keep the math simple. But let's say they purchased those treasuries with $1,000 face value, but that's when the interest rate was 1.5%. What happens to the face value of those treasuries if interest rates go to 3%, go to 5%? Well, the face value of those treasuries are no longer $1,000. The price goes down as the interest rates go up. So let's just assume for a moment that actually, let's go back to the example. Sorry for bouncing around here. I'm just doing this live right off the top of my head. Let's go back to the example of me giving construction loans and having $1 million. And the guys that are in the construction business, they have these accounts receivable. So it's an illiquid asset and they need to make payroll. So they need to borrow $100,000 until Tuesday. Let's go back to them having that Ford pickup truck as collateral. Well, in the first example, I would take that Ford pickup truck. Why? Because let's just assume that it was worth $100,000. And I thought that it was very liquid. And even if I didn't want to sell it, I could keep it. And I would like the asset. But it was worth about $100,000. Therefore, it would cover that $100,000 loan that I gave them. But what happens if the price of that Ford pickup truck goes from $100,000 down to $50,000? Well, now all of a sudden, to get that $100,000 loan they need, they have to give me as collateral two Ford pickup trucks, not just one. So if we assume that there's a relatively fixed number of T-bills or pristine collateral, if the price or the face value of those T-bills gets cut in half, let's just take it to an extreme, because interest rates go up, that means that there's a lot less collateral relative to the liquidity needs for the counterparties in repo. So what I'm getting at here is that whether you think Joseph Wang is correct or you think Jeff Snyder is correct, the bottom line is if interest rates go up and the Fed continues to take them up, this is dramatically increasing the risk that we have another repo blow up, just like we had in 2019. Because whether it's a liquidity issue, the liquidity is reduced. If it's a collateral issue, the collateral is reduced. so there's only one place you can go. Now, that said, there are some things that are acting as a counterbalance. Because if interest rates go up, and if they do start to reduce the size of their balance sheet, That means that they're selling, let's say, T-bills back to the banksters. So they're increasing the amount of collateral available. But let's just assume they raise interest rates and they don't get to quantitative easing. Well, then what they're doing is on net balance, that's just a reduction of the amount, not of the amount of treasuries, but of the face value of those treasuries. Therefore, relative to their liquidity needs, it's a reduction in the amount of overall collateral. So I think this is something that I'm really going to try to flush out on tomorrow's whiteboard video. And as most of you know, the repo market is absolutely crucial. It is the plumbing. It is the oil that really keeps the financial system moving. And if it freezes up, it's just like the engine of your car trying to run on no oil. It'll freeze. And if the engine isn't working, your car isn't working. And the repo market is really the engine of the entire global economy. So I wanted to present those ideas to you guys because I think it's something that's very important. And I think it's something that you guys should be trying to think through as well. All right. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Make sure that you're always standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism.